This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligny Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Good to have you with us on this Friday. With you until 1 o'clock, it is the Gas House Gang with Mike Claiborne, Matt Pauly, Chris Ranji today. And we will talk to Andre Pallante, starter for the Cardinals, will be with us around 12:30, and we hope you will stick around for that. You can phone in or text in at 314-436-7900. You can watch the show on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter. Find the Gas House Gang, search it out, or find the KMOX sports page, and we are right there for you. And guys, here we are. The Cardinals getting ready to play in Houston tonight. 7:10 is the first pitch. We'll have that right here on KMOX, which means the pregame show will come your way at 6:15. And the Astros, this is a... You know, we'll talk specifically about the Cardinals, and I know Matt and I brought this up yesterday, that this is an interesting place they're going into, because the Astros have scored more runs than just about anybody else in baseball, but they have the worst record in their division, which you don't typically see. They've also given up a ton of runs, obviously, but this will be an interesting series tonight, Claibs. Can't hear Mike Claiborne right now. We'll get him unmuted. Matt Pauly, I know we talked about this yesterday, but it's, you don't see this very often. We're 3 weeks into the season, and here's where the Astros are, a record of 8-12, but they've scored 107 runs.
Yeah, it's and they've been among the league leaders in runs scored. They've been among the league leaders in runs allowed. They're a really, really banged up team. They've got a bunch of starting pitching that is currently on the injured list. They're calling a guy up to start the game today who's been at AAA, and Peter Lambert. The Cardinals actually saw him a few years ago. I think it was in maybe 2019 when he was pitching for the Rockies that he faced off against the Cardinals. So it's been a little while. He's been kind of a guy who's bounced around a bit, but he put up good numbers to start the year at AAA. So the Astros had lost, I think 8 games in a row. I was glad that they took 2 of 3 from the Rockies, because it always worries me when you get one of those teams that's going that's on a long losing streak.
Yeah.
So they were able to go take 2 of 3 against the Rockies, and hopefully the Cardinals are just catching them at a pretty good time.
Claibs, I think we have you back by now. No, we do not. It is still having issues getting Mike Claiborne. Well, at any rate, we'll work on Mike. We'll work on getting the connection here established. But for the Cardinals, a 10-8 start to the season, Matt. And, you know, I know we have to keep doing this caveat thing where it's only 3 weeks. You can't worry too much about record 3 weeks in. You don't know everything you can about the team 3 weeks into the season. But I don't really think you could have realistically asked for much more from the Cardinals at this point of the year. I mean, to be above 500, to have a couple of younger individuals on the team really performing well, this is what I'm asking for. This is what I'm asking for in 2026.
Yeah, I think that's fair, Ranj. And their run differential is -17. That's the worst run differential for a team that is above 500. And that's what this team has done. And that's where, I'm not trying to make this an Oliver Marmol conversation. I'm really, really not. But that's where I get frustrated sometimes with people who really do not like him, because one of the things you look at, not just this year, but you look at last year and even the year before that, when you look at some of these things that you can add up and look at what your expected record should be, the Cardinals outplay their expected record. And like last year, the reason they outplayed their expected record in large part was because the bullpen was putting up huge numbers. Well, the Cardinals, Ranj, this is wild. The Cardinals have a -17 run differential.
Hello.
They have a bullpen
Hello.
That really you can trust two guys in it for sure in Riley O'Brien and JoJo Romero, and a bunch of other guys have not been great, and then some other guys beyond that have been hit or miss. And then you have a starting rotation that so far this year, you have Michael McGreevy, who's putting up really, really good numbers, but his expected numbers are about double what his ERA actually is. And then you have Matthew Liberatore, who I really, really like, but he hasn't put up the numbers that you were hoping for him to have quite yet. You know, he's got a plus four ERA. Andre Pallante has a plus four ERA. Kyle Leahy has a plus five ERA. Dustin May has been really, really good his last two starts, but for the time before that, two times before that, it wasn't good, and his ERA is close to seven. You add all this up, you put it in a Super Bowl, and you pull something out. You don't have a team that's two games above 500 yet. Here, the Cardinals are two games above 500. I don't know how they've done it totally outside of the fact that they've been very good in close games. They've played one run games, they've played extra inning games, and they have found ways to win those games. But this team doesn't have any business being two games over 500 right now. But it's just kind of more of the same from this team.
Well, you know, that's what happened last year. They finished, what, four games better than they probably should have based on that Pythagorean, which you could see it at Baseball Reference, which is runs scored, runs allowed. They kind of calculate what your team probably should be or around what it should be. And it's the same thing right now. I mean, that number says they should be 7-11 on the season. 7-11. And right now they are two games over 500. So they are besting that. And this conversation, this is a perfect bit of information to have to present to somebody who is still holding out that they don't like this coaching staff. They don't like the manager. They don't like everybody else who's on the staff. I think this is pretty good evidence. And again, I don't subscribe to the idea that a manager is a make all or break all or can make a team 10 or 15 games better. I just don't think it works like that. Mm-mm. Not in baseball. But if we're going to try and measure that, all indications are that this coaching staff does better with this roster than it should.
Agreed. 100% agreed. And it's fun to watch. This has been a really fun team so far this year. And another thing you can't really measure, Ronj, and I'm not trying to like go all rah-rah on everybody here, but you watch this team play, and maybe it's just the youthful energy, but it's obvious and it's clear that this is a bunch of guys that do care and do want to go out and want to win games and that sort of thing. And that should be worth something. And I do think there's more buzz about this team this year than there has been either the last couple years. I would love for that to translate in more people showing up to games. There weren't a ton of people in the Cleveland series. The Boston series was fine from an attendance standpoint. But I do think for some people, and it's probably a lot of the that silent majority type, I think a lot of those people are starting to hop on and realizing that this could be a really fun team. That doesn't mean that they're going to be contending for a division. That doesn't even mean they're going to finish out the year above 500. But it means that every single night they're going to be able to put out a really good product for you to watch.
Yeah, and I don't blame people for not paying right now to go see them play. I mean, if they want to go, they can go, but I think there are reasons to go watch them, and the younger players, to me, are the biggest reason to do so. And I believe we have Klaibs now with us, and we were just talking, Mike, about how this team has overperformed probably what it should be. And if you look at some of the numbers, runs scored, runs allowed, they should probably be about four, five, six games worse than they are at the moment.
I don't really think they've overperformed. I think they're right where they're supposed to be. I think they've had some very successful highs. They've had some disappointing lows, and I think that that's part of what growth and development is all about. So they're right on course as far as I'm concerned, and they're going to have a five-game losing streak. They're going to win six in a row. It's going to go back and forth. But the only thing I think we have to look at is the individual progress of players like Walker, like Scott, like Gorman, and just seeing if these guys are raising their game with each game. And hopefully with each game, they come away learning something on how to be better for tomorrow. And they could go 4-for-4 tonight, and then they may go 0 for the next seven. So it just depends on what they're learning as far as growth is concerned. So having said all that, you know, they're right where I thought they should be.
Yeah, it's a team that is going to go through growth here, and to me, that is the single most important thing they can do this season is make progress and help themselves and help the front office figure out what they need to do next. Because we're talking about a little bit of a process here in trying to get the roster back to the level where it's competing every year and not just, you know, hopefully this guy does well. Hopefully he plays above his career norms. You know, getting back to more consistency, it's going to take a little bit of time. It's not going to happen all this year.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing is we can't go into a season, fingers crossed, hoping, as you just touched on.
Right.
You know, we had to see growth. We had to see guys where at the end of the season we say to ourselves, okay, we need to be better at this position. Do we have anybody in the organization? The answer may be no. So how do we get someone who can help us grow at a certain position? And I think when you look at the team now, you say to yourself, all right, who are – I think third base and left field are probably the question marks going into this season and seeing how those two positions develop.
Yeah, Kevin Wheeler and I have talked about this a little bit lately. We don't – with all the catching depth in the organization, Raniel Rodriguez is 19 years old. He is killing it right now at single A. He's probably going to be a 19-year-old at double A, which is one of those unheard of type of things. There's so much catching depth with Crooks and Bernal not that far off. And when you've got a guy who's got the ceiling that a Rodriguez has from a hitting standpoint, a lot of those guys do get moved off the catching position. And third base is one area where I think there's question marks moving forward, and there's not that clear heir apparent at third base. I just, and again, Kevin brought this up, and I agree with him wholeheartedly. I wonder if there's any internal conversations with the Cardinals that if they move Rodriguez off of catcher, if maybe they look at him as a third baseman.
It's a great point. And I think because of his youth, you can probably get away with it if you really feel that way. But I think it's something that we probably have to take a long look at because, you know, you're backlogged at the catching position. And even Bernal is now playing first base. He's playing a little first base right now for the Cardinals in Triple-A. So there's a lot of different scenarios they can go from. But I just think, as I said earlier, we just have to evaluate these guys day to day and then add it up at the end of each month and see how much they've improved or how much they've regressed.
Mike Claiborne, Matt Pauly, Chris Ronji on the Gas House Gang. Andre Pallante is going to join the show at 12:30. It's good that you're with us today. You can leave us comments, questions on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter at KMOX Sports. Find us there or just search out the Gas House Gang and you can watch the show as well. With you until 1 o'clock on the Gas House Gang on KMOX. It is the Gas House Gang on KMOX, and on this day when the Cardinals begin a series in Houston to take on the Astros tonight, we'll have that first pitch at 7:10 right here on 104.1 FM KMOX, 6:15 pregame. You can also listen on the Odyssey app. Download the app to your phone. You can get KMOX all day long. You can get the ball games for free, too, if you're in the listening area. So, guys, I know we have spent a lot of time last couple of weeks talking about the start for Jordan Walker and Claibs. Let me start with you as we sit here. This is the first day in a while that Jordan Walker is not in the sole lead for home runs in baseball. Aaron Judge caught up to him. He's got 8 now on the season, but he and Aaron Judge are tied for the lead right now. They got Mike Trout, Yordan Alvarez, who will play against the Cardinals tonight. Brandon Lowe, they have all got 7 home runs on the season. But Claibs, this is, you really can't say enough about what Walker has done. I know it's 3 weeks. I know that there's a lot to be encouraged by, and it could turn at any moment here. But right now, what we've seen from him, all the peripherals, all the measurements, everything, it looks right. Everything he's doing at the moment looks pretty good.
Yeah, and you know, Chris, he checks the boxes I think we envisioned when he was first drafted. I mean, he's this big, massive, physically impressive individual who showed power early in his career as far as before he got to the Cardinals, before he was drafted. And it's taken some time, but we see that. And I think he's at a point where I'm not going to say he's going to lead the league in home runs. He won't lead the league in batting average. But I think we kind of have an idea of where he fits. You know, when you draft a guy in the first round, you don't expect him to hit eighth or seventh in your lineup. You know, you want him to be a guy who's a real offensive contributor. And I think when you see how much he's improved from a defensive standpoint, where there was a point where when they decided to put him in right field, you held your breath on every ball that was hit to him.
Mm-hmm.
Now he may be your best outfielder, as far as certainly best throwing arm on the team for sure. And he's really worked to be that way. And I think we're seeing that on the other side of the ball now, as far as his offense is concerned, where he's not getting himself out as much as he used to, where he may get punched out from time to time. He may be a call strike somewhere along the way, or he may chase a pitch. But it's not with the regularity we saw the last couple of years. Now, I'll throw this question to both you guys. At what point does he have to make sure – if teams don't want to pitch to him because they feel like anybody behind him they can get out, at what point does he have to figure out, okay, I still have to stay in my lane and not chase pitches to put it in play? And I think that's going to be the next challenge for him, because at some point, if he's this dangerous on a regular basis, they won't pitch to him. He may see one strike in an at-bat. So he's got to make sure he doesn't start expanding his strike zone to the point where he's chasing balls like that he did last year and the year before.
Especially because they're going to play some teams that, they don't have a lineup that I think other teams are frightened by. It's not like you've got that middle of the order where, you might pitch around Walker, but now you got Aaron Judge to face. You know,
exactly.
You don't have that, so... As long as he can stay patient, and that might get really frustrating for him, but he has. I don't, and you guys might be able to explain this better because you're closer to the situation. But however, coaching can work with him to make sure he doesn't get outside of himself, because that'll be the biggest key here. Because there's going to be an instinct where he feels like he can't do anything because they're not throwing him anything, so he might want to overextend himself, which would be a really bad idea.
Yeah, there's a lot of discipline in that, and that's what he has to do. But it's not easy, but in a way it should be easy, and this is what I mean by this. He has been one of the worst hitters in all of baseball for the last 2 years. He's made some changes in his swing and everything. I'm not trying to be dismissive of that. But just as impactful of the changes he's made, it's the pitches that he's swinging at and making contact with. So if he's got a great example of the last 2 years of what happens when you do go outside the zone, when you start swinging at pitches that you should not be swinging at. And no matter how frustrating it might be, if you're not getting pitches to hit and you keep getting put on via walk, he doesn't want to go back to what it was over the last couple years. So I am hopeful that he does remain really disciplined. I know that's the first thing he talks about. When you ask him what's going right with him, he talks so often about swinging at the pitches that he is supposed to swing at and not swinging at the ones that he doesn't. So that's the front of mind thing for Jordan Walker, and then everything else is kind of following through. So that gives me a lot of hope that no matter how he is being pitched, he's going to continue to remain disciplined in that.
Yeah, that's my hope. If he does that, I think we're really on to something special here. It could end up being a frustrating year for him in that respect, that he wants to be able to offer it more pitches, but he's just not getting anything to hit. He's going to get his opportunities. So what'll have to happen moving forward is, if he does get limited opportunities, he will just have to take advantage of those. Maybe he gets a pitch or two per game to hit. He's just simply going to have to hit those.
Well, it wouldn't hurt if they had somebody who could hit behind him.
That would not hurt. You're right.
I'll just say it.
I mean, that's the challenge.
If you know anybody, give us a call. Yeah.
He'll have to mistake hunt. You know, he will just have to.
Exactly.
If guys make mistakes to him, he will have to jump on those and he will have to take advantage. That might be his life for the last 4 months of the season.
Well, and you know what? The other thing is, I said about somebody hitting behind him, they're going to have to pitch to him differently if they're runners on base, too.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's runners at first and second where there's not a base open for him, they're going to have to pitch to him, and he's going to have to really be, as you guys touched on, be patient in making sure they throw him strikes in that situation. But I think Jordan Walker's only going to be as good as the people in front of him and behind him.
I'm going to be curious to watch. So of his at-bats this year, he only has 16 at-bats this year when the Cardinals are winning, which is remarkable. The vast majority of his at-bats this year have come when the team is either behind or when the score is tied. At some point in time, he's going to be getting more at-bats when, say, the team is winning by a run or two, and watching how he gets pitched in those situations versus how he's been pitched so far is going to be something to keep an eye on.
You know what, Matt? You ran that stat by me the other day, and it said a lot of things about how prepared you are. But it also tells us what he does when the team is behind, how effective he still remains to be.
Yeah, so his numbers when the team is trailing are crazy. He is a 29 at-bats. He's a 517 hitter with a 1740 OPS, and six of his home runs have come when the team is behind.
Well, Matt Pauly, we will be listening to Redbird Rush Hour today at 5 o'clock. You got Bernie with you? Is that correct?
What day is it? Is it Friday?
It's Friday.
We got Bernie. Yep. That's
I think
right.
It is. I'm not sure. Let me
I never know what day it is. I just show up to work when I'm
it
supposed
is.
To be there.
Guys,
they all start running together. I get it.
I'm looking at the calendar right now. It is, in fact, Friday, April 17th. Hope you did your taxes. Otherwise, you're both in trouble. Matt Pauly, we
I'm
will
in
talk
trouble
to
no matter what.
That's right. Matt, we'll talk to you. We'll hear from you at 5 o'clock. Pre-game show, 6:15. First pitch tonight, 7:10. We'll be listening to all of it. Thanks, Matt.
You bet.
Mike Claiborne and I will continue on. When we come back, we will talk to Cardinals starter Andre Pallante. He is next on KMOX. Mike Claiborne, Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang today on 104.1 FM KMOX. Time to go to the guest line, and we've got with us now Cardinals starter Andre Pallante. He'll get the ball tomorrow in Houston as the Cardinals start a series tonight against the Astros on the road. Andre, thank you for coming on the show today. How are you?
I'm doing really good. How about you guys?
We're doing great. So you're started the season so far. How are you feeling about the way things have gone in 2026?
Yeah, I mean, it's been an exciting group to be a part of, for sure. We've been playing pretty good baseball and won a lot of games. Had some guys in the bullpen throw really well. Riley and JoJo have been awesome, so it's been great to see their success. And, you know, the lineup's been coming around. Seeing Jordan Walker hit so many home runs has been fun to be a part of. And, yeah, watching McGreevy and May had a couple really good last couple of starts, so it's been fun to watch that as well.
Remember when you first came up? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we got you, Claibs.
Okay. I want to walk us through, for our listeners, what your routine is like when you're not pitching leading up to tomorrow. What are some of the things you try and maintain and some of the things you do to get ready for your next start?
Yeah, I mean, some of the biggest things that we do, especially as starting pitchers, is trying to work on our bodies, making sure that our arms and our bodies are capable to handle the high workload that we have to endure on a single day of a start. So a lot of that basically involves kind of like routine stretching and maintenance on making sure my arm muscles are stretchy and stuff like that, and putting up strength in my lower body. So a lot of lifting to build up lower body strength. And then in terms of like pitches, you know, I have a big bullpen in the middle of the week where you work on whatever kind of didn't feel great in the last outing or whatever you're working towards is your end goal. So personally for me, I've been working on that changeup a good bit, as well as just kind of landing my curveball a lot more.
How do you feel that's coming along for you, that change?
It's been really good. Last outing was the worst it's been. So kind of going back to that, but the first few outings has been really good, and feel like that really helps keep left-handed hitters off balance, and think of something that can really help vault success.
You know, for you as a pitcher, we talk so much about pitch count these days. And I'm sure you've had those days where you can zip through three or four innings and turn around and say, wow, I've only thrown 28 pitches or 30 pitches. And then you can turn around the next day and say, wait a minute, I've thrown 50 pitches and I'm not out of the third inning. What's that like for you mentally to be able to gauge when you're really effective and not think about pitch count at all?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I never think about it. I don't think many of us do while we're out there. It's really just more or less the stressful environments of when you're on the mound and you got runners in scoring position constantly. Because when you got guys on second, third, and nobody out or one out, whatever that is, you make those high-pressure pitches. It takes a lot of you, not only physically, but there's also the physical toll of every pitch, but the mental toll. Because you're, you know, when you got runners in scoring position, things get a little bit more anxiety, a little bit more of everything going on, a little bit more high strung. And when you're constantly in that kind of fight or flight response with traffic, maybe in three ball counts and stuff, it takes a lot out of you. But yeah, in terms of just pitch count, it's never something that we're thinking about. But definitely, like, your body feels a lot better when you're working smoothly and you're working fast. And it's better for the defense and better for the team as a whole.
You've made a lot of starts over the last couple of years coming into this season. Do you have – when do you start to feel – at what point of the year do you feel like you have kind of settled in? Because you're only three starts in right now. You're going to make your fourth one tomorrow. So do you feel like it takes you a little bit of time before you finally get there?
Yeah, for sure. I think, I would say, like, say around your sixth or seventh start, you kind of start to feel, okay, what's feeling really good this year? What's kind of feeling, what you're working on, everything like that? Where are you? How hard are you throwing? You're seeing it, like, McGreevy's last start, I think, is Velo picked up a good bit, so he's starting to get back towards himself. You just see things that at the beginning of the year is that maybe you're not landing a pitch quite right. Maybe your mechanics are a bit off and you're losing velocity deeper in the starts, like just small stuff like that. And I feel like right around a third of the season, a quarter of the way through the season, you start to find your footing and find that consistency of who you'll probably be for the rest of the year.
Andre Pallante is our guest. And Andre, for you, like a lot of guys in the rotation, they started their careers in the big leagues coming out of the bullpen. What's the best advice you got when you made that transition from the bullpen to being in the starting rotation?
I've gotten so much advice. I was lucky to, be around and start with a couple of really good arms. I had Wainwright and Miles around with me when I first came up. I had Montgomery there for a good bit. I've learned a lot. And Quintana, too, he was awesome. And Gibby and Lance. So I've learned a lot from all those guys. And I think one thing that Waino talked about a lot was, like, you learn the bullpen, like, that you got to come out with every one of your pitches. You got to be ready to go from pitch one. It's not high school ball where maybe you're overpowering guys with one pitch. So in the bullpen, you learn that you got to be able to come out with everything you got on pitch one. And I think one of the things you learn as a starter coming from the bullpen really is just like how to learn from at bat to at bat. Sometimes reliever, you go out there, you get a hit, and you're kind of like no idea what that guy's looking for. But once you get a hit, you kind of start to see what they're doing, what their pattern is, the hitter's pattern on you. And then you kind of learn how to make that adjustment for the second or third time you have to face them.
So nowadays there is so much more technology available to everybody. Pitching staffs, hitters have the same sort of thing. And now the hitters have the traject thing where they can see what a pitcher looks like. They can actually take batting practice against a pitcher. It looks like that pitcher. It same delivery, same sort of spin and everything. Does it make it more challenging as a pitcher when you don't get to face guys who have... maybe they haven't seen the traject thing, right? Where they don't get that experience of facing you virtually first. I would think it's more challenging for pitchers now than it used to be.
Yeah, obviously that's not necessarily something I can quantify, right?
Right.
But yeah, you can definitely tell there's an advantage to when you're facing a guy that's never seen you before and you've got, your arm angle is a little different. You've got a weird release. You've got some deceptiveness in your delivery. Maybe your pitches move a slightly different way. But when they're able to see all that, for hundreds and hundreds of reps before the 10 reps in the game that actually matter, it definitely makes it a lot more difficult. You can't rely on surprise or, uniqueness as much as you could in the past. You have to be able to pitch regardless of what makes you good. And so I think that's definitely something that the game is starting to learn is, that little bit of uniqueness and stuff that's just a little bit different that guys are able to get those reps off of helps hitters a lot.
Andre, one of the things I've always been intrigued by is catcher-pitcher relationships, and a catcher may call for one pitch, you want to throw another, and somewhere in between, you throw a pitch maybe you don't have total conviction for. How often do you see that happening for you in your career, and when you're not sure, what do you try and do? Do you step off? Do you shake them off? Or you have a discussion at some point about what you really feel good in throwing that particular game?
Yeah, usually when before we go out there for the game, we talk about it. We have a meeting with the catchers and the pitching coach, and we all kind of talk about, like, what we have from the scouting report. Is this guy, does he not like the slower breaking balls? Does he like the harder breaking balls? Does he like pitches that are moving away from him, moving into him? So going into the game, we already have a predetermined kind of plan on what these guys like and what these guys don't like to see. Within that, then once you get in the game and a pitcher learns, okay, this is what I've got working today. This doesn't really feel good. this feels really good. Let's lean on that. So you have those, you have, once you figure that out in the first couple innings, you have that conversation with your catcher as well throughout the game. And so you kind of are able to have that communication to learn, okay, well, let's lean on this or whatever. And then within an at bat, you know, there's no longer time to step off. You know, if there's no one on base, you can't step off and continue to shake, because otherwise you'll get an automatic ball. And you only get two steps off, step off with runners on base anyways, and you need that to hold the running game. So once you're out there, the pitcher kind of overrules everything. The catcher is giving a suggestion. It comes down to the pitcher to call a pitch that he has the most confidence in executing or will help get the batter out. So yeah, then that's just kind of how the process works. And, you know, it's a constant learning experience. No one's ever always right or always wrong. So, you know, you're just trying to go through it the best we can and be as effective as possible.
Does it ever happen the other way around where you think you've got a pitch on a given day that's feeling pretty good to you? Catcher tells you it doesn't look right. It's not working over here, so we're not going to do that. Does that ever happen?
I don't think so. I'm sure usually as pitchers, we kind of know if something feels right or wrong. Like, we know it definitely better from the catchers, at least. Like, if something feels good to us, we know it's good. You know, like, we're not, it's very rarely do we feel like, oh, that felt really good, and then you ask the catcher, like, not so much. but I mean, at least I hope that's never the case, because
they're just not telling you. Yeah.
They'll at least lie to us if we say it feels good. But sometimes they might be like, hey, like, this is playing really well. Like, it's not so much criticism of, oh yeah, this feels good. And they're like, no, it's more like, oh, I think this looks even better. That's kind of more how they would phrase it, I would say.
Hey, you know, you touched on something earlier about this team and the energy that it has, and just how much fun it is to be in the ballpark with these guys. What was the turning point, and when did it start as far as this team coming together in the manner that it is now? Was it spring training? Was it the end of last year? What in your opinion, was the big day that things turned around?
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts with, day one of spring training. You know, Ollie does a good job of setting the environment for the clubhouse, right? Like, we had a meeting, I want to say it was like day one or day two, and we were all together after physicals and everything. And he's like, hey, you know, we're a young team, but that means we're going to be, you know, hungry, excited, and stuff like, you know, that's the environment we're trying to set, that he wants us to set for our team. And I think a lot of the guys are buying in, and especially when you have some good results to start a year, everyone tends to buy in a little bit more and things start to go good and feel good. And so I think it's really just a good job of the coaching staff, a good job of the players for buying in, and it makes it a lot more fun. I remember bringing up in spring, like even the winter warm-up, you know, when you got young guys and everyone's taking every at bat as seriously as they can, regardless of the situation, you know, whether we're down by 10, whatever that, like, it's not just another day at the ballpark for everyone. For everyone, this is, you know, it's a day in the big leagues when you're young. And so I think that shows in the way that this team is playing, and some of our comeback victories are a testament to that.
You mentioned the young team. How much does it matter, if at all, that there aren't a whole lot of guys who are well over 30? I mean, you've got a couple of guys in their younger 30s, one in his mid-30s, but, I mean, this is a really young team. So how much do you think that matters?
Yeah, I mean, age is age, right? It's not really a stat that matters in winning or losing a baseball game. At the end of the day, if a guy's hitting good or a guy's pitching good or pitching poorly or hitting poorly, like, it doesn't really matter what your age is. You know, there's a little bit of knowledge and stuff like that that comes with that age when you've played in the game for a long time, but so much of this is passed down knowledge that guys can learn at such a young age. So, you know, like, you look at some guys come up and they might be young in age, but high in baseball IQ and high in knowledge, and they don't need an old guy to tell them what to do because they already know. Like, you know, they already know the ins and outs of baseball, and that's what the coaching staff does a great job of as well.
Andre.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. No, you can finish up.
That's pretty much the end of what I was going to say.
So my final question for you, we talk about the culture of the clubhouse. Who's the one guy who keeps things loose, and the one guy, when you get to the ballpark, you know he's going to say or do something that's going to make you laugh?
I mean, I think we've got a bunch of guys that take over that role. You know, I think Pedro's a great clubhouse guy. I mean, he brings all the pitchers together, and, like, pitchers and catchers, he's awesome. He's super well-liked and all that. I think JoJo is one of the funniest guys I've ever met. I love hanging around JoJo. He's awesome and really exciting. As well as, you know, Lars is a clown, and it's always good to have Lars around, and I'm sure you've heard that a bunch.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know,
oh,
it's, just, yeah. There's, it's coming from everywhere, you know?
Lars is a clown. I love that so much.
You know what? I don't think there's going to be an argument about that either. I don't think anybody's going to disagree with what Andre just said about Lars. And even Lars would probably say, yeah, you're right. I probably am. Yeah.
Oh, Andre Pallante, we really appreciate you. Good luck tomorrow against the Houston Astros. Thank you for being with us today. Also, a couple of years ago, I threw out first pitch with Amy, my other co-host, and you caught it. So, well done. Thank you.
Did he tell you to stay with the day job?
Hopefully you didn't spike it into my leg.
I did it. No. I made it there on the fly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you own the grass. What do you expect?
That's right. No. I went to the mound. I went to the rubber. And I've got the Andre Pallante signed ball, too. So I appreciate it. Thank you, Andre, for all of that and for being with us today.
Thank you guys for having me on.
That is Cardinals starting pitcher Andre Pallante with us here on KMOX.